The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. Ray in today doing a little extra duty. Tom Fairbanks taking the day off. It's our Friday show. It's the September 14th edition of Buckmaster. We are live here Monday through Friday during the noon hour and our home station, AM 1030 KVOI. And of course, we have our worldwide live listening through the miracle of computing. You can hear the program with live streaming, worldwide listening at buckmastershow.com, which picks up the feed from kvoi.com, 24/7 on kvoi.com with all of our programs. Our media partners, thank you, Dylan Smith, who is the editor-publisher of Tucson's online news service, tucsonsentinel.com. Dylan has been a supporter of the Buckmaster Show pretty much since its inception. Thank you, Dylan.
Since the very first bumper music you played.
Yeah, probably so. That would have been that January 4th show, 2011. The Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, Dan Shear's organization down there. Not that Dan's the owner, but he is the...
He's the driving force. He makes it happen.
I think so. He's the editor-in-chief. Tucson Media Group, their portfolio includes the Tucson-based publications Inside Tucson Business and Tucson Weekly. Our friend Jim Nintzel is the executive editor.
Sounds fancy, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it, though? The formal title for Jim, executive editor of the Weekly. Our Friday Focus interview this afternoon, we have not had Mr. Ortega on the program in a while, so I thought it's always good to catch up with Mike Ortega, the Tucson city manager, who is now in his fourth year at the helm of managing a rather large city of 600,000.
That's people. Like a modern day record.
Yes. Yeah,
4 years in that post.
That is.
Considering.
He's got 600,000 people and a 260 square mile footprint. It's pretty big there, Mike. Good to see you,
sir. Good to see you, Bill.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been on the show, and we wanted to bring you back because, first of all, we want to begin with how is the city of Tucson doing financially?
So we're doing great, and I think that to the credit of the council and their leadership, and really looking back just even a couple years ago, I think one of the first times you and I met, Bill, we were facing a $25 million shortfall, and there was a lot of conversation around that. So we went to work. To really stabilize, make sure that our expenditures met our revenues, and really looking long term. And you know, as we've talked many times, our pension, you know, challenges and all the other things that we've got out there, but making sure we had a game plan for addressing them in the long term. And I'm pleased to say that I think we're on a good track.
So when you started, what was the red ink? How much red ink?
Well, as I recall, it was somewhere around $25 million was what we were faced with.
And, was that a kind of a record amount? Or
actually, it wasn't. as I went back and looked, it seemed like every single year was the headline. And I used to suggest to the staff, you know, I really would like to get away from a headline that says, you know, city facing $25 or $30 million.
Bankruptcy or something.
Yeah, and I think that it was unfortunate, but we had been facing that for many years, and I think there was always an effort to address that, and we've been able to do some things. And again, you know, I have to give credit to the council and our leadership and making sure that we stayed on track and stayed on focus to bring that down and make sure that our expenditures were such that we were living within our means.
Dylan?
On that same point, all through the recession and quite a while into the aftermath of it, the city's had to keep tightening its belt. Revenues have been decreasing. Are we hitting the point where that's turning around, where revenues are substantially increasing, where we might be able to put some of that budget back into essential services, especially police, which have been cut back so much?
Sure. So the short answer is, I don't think we're on the same trajectory that we were. But unfortunately, our costs have increased. So if you think through it during the recession and the aftermath, our costs continue to go up and our revenues didn't. And so although we're seeing a slight uptick in our revenue, they certainly have not rebounded to the level that our costs have and increased. And some of that I think we can attribute to internet shopping and reduction in we'll call it sales tax revenue growth. So we are seeing some uptick. I think the conversation internally continues down the same path where we have to figure out different ways to do business. Because if you ask everyone, whether it's, you know, Tucson Fire, Tucson Police, you know, even planning and zoning all the way up to and including our parks folks, we need more to be able to continue the same level of service. Well, you know, that's a tall order when your costs of service overall have continued to increase. But, you know, we're continuing to challenge ourselves. We're focusing hard on efficiencies internally. We've done a lot of things internal to make sure that we stay within our means.
And as far as the police department and the staffing, have you been able to how many we've been losing? I don't know the figure. I heard 7 or 8 officers a month. Wasn't that something like that?
Yeah, thanks for
either
asking,
to retirement
Bill.
Or right. Moving to another jurisdiction.
Yeah, that was a huge issue for us a few months ago. Traditionally, we had been losing somewhere around 6 a month. That was kind of, we'll call it, normal attrition. So those 72 officers a year had to be replaced. Well, that uptick to almost 8 on average, and that really started to sting because we weren't able to replace them fast enough. So I went to the council and said, look, we've got to do something. Here's the business case for that, and here's some opportunities. We did a bunch of exit interviews with officers that were leaving. So working together with the police department and really the whole team, it wasn't just police, it was the whole city team, came up with some strategies on police report. Even last month, our numbers were down. We lost 4 through attrition, which is half of what we had before. Still early, but I remain hopeful. And the beauty of that is it gives me, you know, an opportunity to catch our breath and get those staffing levels back where they need to be.
Could you talk about staffing levels? Where are we right now?
So I don't have the exact number right out of the
sheet, roughly.
Bill. I know that we were in the 850 range, and that's the total FTE count. But in fairness, not all of those officers are ready to be on the street. So we're down around 800. Those are the folks that are trained. So we've got about 50 in the pipeline at any given time, which is both academy as well as in the training programs. And so, you know, I don't like to count the entire FTE count or make an assumption that all those folks are ready to be deployed. It's really those folks that can be out in the field, and we're at right around 800.
We don't talk much about the fire department, and I'm wondering, what about their staff? Are they having similar issues? Are we losing firefighters to other jurisdictions, or what? How does that work?
So we have lost some to other jurisdictions. The business case is a little different there because their attrition rate is less than we had over in police, but I'm watching it very carefully, and part of that, Bill and Dylan, is the chemistry of the new recruit. They're much more mobile. They're much more able to make a change. And so we've got to be anticipating that in the future and make sure we don't put ourselves in a position, because it does cost us not only in time but in dollars to do that training. And so we want to make sure that we're able to hold on to them. So I can tell you that we haven't ignored, I haven't been ignoring fire. I think fire is next on the list to make sure we're dealing with whatever attrition they might have, that we can stem the flow.
If 101, Proposition 101, had not passed last May, which put $150 million into new capital for police and fire, that would have been a recruiting nightmare, wouldn't it have been?
Absolutely. I'll tell you, I didn't want to speculate what would happen if it didn't, but it certainly gave us
those
a little
vehicles
more.
That Absolutely. Were like running on how many times around?
You know, yeah.
300,000 miles or something. I don't know. I mean, bad shape, some of the cars.
It was tough, and it wasn't it wasn't just that, but it was all of the above in terms of our ability to respond and our facilities and the equipment and everything from vests to cardiac monitors. I mean, it was.
We're a ways into that program. How much money has come in, and what has it been spent on?
We are on track, and I apologize, I didn't bring my little spreadsheet. I could give you the exact numbers.
Oh, you've got it back at the office.
We do. We have all that, and I can get into detail. But I will tell you this. We watch it very closely. One of the things that not only did I take very seriously, but the council did as well, is to make sure that we spend it on exactly what we said we were going to. And so right now we're in the lead-up effort, if you will, for a lot of the facility improvements. We're under design for some of those fire stations and upgrades. Our vehicle purchases are right on target. We've been able to get those going, and those had some long lead times, so we've been able to do that. We bought, you know, cardiac monitors. I think you may have seen some press on that a bit ago. We bought some vests. Those have got some good press as well. But again, it's really staying focused on saying, hey, this is what we said we were going to do, and staying committed to that. And so we're right on track at this point.
And you're branding your vehicles too.
Yeah, well, you know, it's important to people know, hey, this is what we're getting for those dollars. You know, we went to the voters and asked them for help and for really an opportunity to improve those facilities and those vehicles. And we want them to know this is a vehicle that we bought with your money that you allocated for this purpose.
Dylan, are you getting hungry yet?
It's approaching lunchtime.
And you know where I'm going, don't you?
I think I do. I think I have an idea what you're going to talk about here.
We're going to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, which is a fabulous pastry. Mike, I don't know if you're familiar with the Kringle, but I think you would like it.
I'm embarrassed to tell you I am not familiar,
well,
but I would love to try it.
There you go. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve and his team of bakers getting up so early in the morning. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they're up like 2 o'clock in the morning or
something. They just stay up all night.
They stay up all night. But anyway, and you know, they've got the bread in the oven and ready right now. The bread came out of the oven a couple of hours ago, and it's a wide variety of choices for your sandwich right now at Mona's Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. Go to my website. There's a link to Mona's Danish Bakery and all of our partners on the Buckmaster Show, where it is now exactly 12:16. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Monday during the Monday Political Face-Off for John Munger and Vince Robigo. Plus, we talk education with David Safir. David writes at the TucsonWeekly.com, the Range column. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI. Have our worldwide live listening podcast and show archive on my website, BuckmasterShow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition. The Friday edition re-airs at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. So, Dylan, if people are listening now, maybe they're starting their day.
If they're listening now, they're starting their day. In the temporal displacement of recorded radio. Yes.
Dylan Smith is with us. Dylan from TucsonSentinel.com, and Mike Ortega is here, the city manager for the city of Tucson. And I know, Mr. Ortega, you've been very busy with the whole Proposition 407. That's the parks and parks, and it's. I think you're terming it connections bond.
Connectivity, right?
Connectivity. Right. What's that all about?
Well, There's an opportunity. We have some debt that is coming off our books. And so I suggest to the council, let's have a conversation around keeping our payment the same, which basically means the tax rate stays the same, but addressing some of the needs that we have out in the community. And parks, obviously, is a big one. We haven't put a lot of money into parks over many, many years, probably even decades now. So there's an opportunity, but also to really look at expanding the opportunity for use. I heard some numbers that will be expanding just because of new ball fields and lighting, almost 80,000 hours of sports. And so that's big for an opportunity there, and so we're looking forward to that. But we also have an opportunity for connection, you know, connectivity, which is both enhancement to bikeways, bike boulevards, those kinds of things, and also what we're calling greenways, which are connectivity to the loop, connectivity from the loop to parks, to businesses, you know, commerce centers, as well as schools, gives everyone the ability to go from point A to point B without crossing major thoroughfares. That's the plan. I mean, certainly not all-inclusive, but there's the start. And if you think of it simplistically, the loop is like the outer rim. And what we're talking about is the start of the spokes, you know, to that bicycle wheel, and really trying to bring that connectivity piece into play within the city of Tucson.
And we're talking about 128 park and recreation facilities. I was surprised at that number. You know, we think of kind of our signature parks like Reed Park, Himmel Park, and a few others. And if you probably would ask some citizens, well, what do you think? How many parks are there in the city? They'd probably say, maybe a couple of dozen. It's a big footprint.
It's a very big footprint. And so, you know, they range. We have the regional parks like Reed Park and Joaquin Murrieta, and we've got Udall, mm-hmm. big regional parks. And then we've got a lot of pocket parks. We've got a lot of smaller neighborhood parks that are, you know, just a few lots big, and they're provided for those particular neighborhoods. So we've got them scattered all over. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to provide some great enhancement to those facilities and ultimately impact the quality of life for our residents.
What do you think about parks, Dylan?
I'm curious what the sort of breakdown is between new projects, like, you know, creating some more greenways and that sort of thing, versus fixing up some of those smaller neighborhood parks that have just been basically sitting there with just the people who live right there taking care of them so often.
Sure. So the total ask is $225 million. About $133 million of that is for parks. The rest of it's for connectivity. As far as new facilities, the vast majority are enhancement to old facilities, if you will, or existing facilities. We do have a few new parks. Three new parks are proposed. But the big part is the enhancement to the existing parks, you know, pathways around the parks, enhancement of shade structures. That's a big deal for us. A lot of those playgrounds do not get used, obviously, in the summer. Even later in the afternoon when it starts to cool a little bit, instead of it, 110, it's 100, but there's no shade. And so we're putting a lot of emphasis on that. And then there's other pieces. Lighting, we're changing out a lot of lighting, making it more efficient, LED. We're also looking at irrigation. That's a big cost for us, and so we're hopeful that we can move the conversation around, the efficiencies around the water as well. And again, it's all inclusive. I mean, so not every park gets touched, but the vast majority do. But the majority of the emphasis is on the existing facilities.
And the facilities really have pretty much gone untouched for many, many years.
That's correct, Bill. And oftentimes people ask, so you got into a position as a city by not, fixing those old parks, and what are you going to do about it?
Why didn't you fix them? Well, why didn't you keep up with it every year?
Sure. And that's a great question. And it's one that we've talked with council quite a bit about and said, look, we have to be ready for maintenance costs going forward. When we add facilities or improve facilities, how can we and make sure that we aren't putting ourselves in a position going down the road and saying we're going to be back in the same spot, 20 years from now. So what I've suggested to the council is that we start now allocating costs on an annual basis. The Parks Bond is a 9-year program, and allocate small amounts every year, and I've given them a path for that, so that at the end of those 9 years, we've got a little bit of a chest built up
for maintenance,
and we can keep those facilities intact. And that's a tall order, because traditionally we haven't been able to do that. But I've suggested to the council on an annual basis, we have to make that commitment going forward.
You could paint yourself into quite a corner here if you don't properly plan for that. If you go and build a bunch of new shade structures at parks all over the place and put up, 120 new Ramadas, and then what happens 15 or 20 years down the road when you need to really go make sure those are still safe?
Absolutely. And to the council's credit, I mean, they challenged us hard on that. And they said, hey, that's great. You've got a source for new money to fix this stuff. But how are we going to maintain it? What are we going to do differently? And so I've given them some ideas. One is our parks budget is, what it is and has been. But I'm expecting some savings to come from those improvements. When I look at our power costs, those should go down a little bit because of the LED lighting. Mm-hmm. Irrigation will reduce my operating costs for water. And what I've said to the council is we're not going to just, take those dollars and put them into the black hole we call the general fund. We're going to put those in a fund specifically for parks maintenance going forward. And keep in mind that when we build a new facility, you don't need maintenance money right this minute, right? Because it's new and you don't have to worry about it. So we want to make sure we put dollars aside for that future conversation, in about 10 to 12 years from now.
Matthew has called us and is waiting patiently at 790-2040. Matthew, what is on your mind?
Well, Mike sort of alluded to it with water. Mike, I don't know if yesterday, within the last 24 hours, major legislation has passed on water, the Water Act, in Congress. Now, the city manager of Nogales took a delegation up to see on Monday to try and get in relief regarding Rio Rico and the whole wastewater treatment issue with Nogales. And the reason it's important is because Santa Cruz's rivers flow into Pima County eventually. I hope you're tracking that issue because Congressman Grijalva's office just relayed information to us that it was not successful. It did not get into the bill. And that legislation has now just passed. And again, Nogales and Southern Arizona has been completely left out of the bill and money and resolution of that issue. I just, again, the last thing I bring up is I hope you're monitoring the Marana pollutant issue. Does it affect Tucson water as well? Those two issues are huge for Southern Arizona and Tucson. Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Thank you, Matthew. And I will tell you that the Santa Cruz River obviously runs through the heart of our city, and so we pay very close attention to some of the sewage issues that they have down in Santa Cruz County and Nogales particularly. And so we're watching it very closely, and we appreciate Congressman Grijalva's leadership on trying to focus and really force that conversation on the south, to our neighbors to the south, because it does impact us. And anytime there's a potential break or flooding issue, that really causes some grief potentially up on the north side. With regard to the challenges that the Marana water system is having, we're right on top of that. I think we're working with our partners over in Marana. We had done some things a bit ago to address it on our end, and we're working very closely with them on a variety of fronts with regard to that issue. And so we're definitely on top of that one as well. But thank you, Matthew. I appreciate it.
On the topic of water, Tucson's kind of changing its approach to taking its entire cap allotment. Can you explain that in a way that I and everybody else can understand?
CAP, Central Arizona Project Allotments.
Go right. Ahead. So on an annual basis, we are allocated so many acre feet of water. And we had, I believe a couple of years ago, opted to not take our full allocation, to leave some in the river, in the lake and Lake Powell, and address some of those drought issues that were happening there. That was a temporary thought that came across, and in the spirit of cooperation, we did that. I know that you're probably familiar. We have our recharge basins over in the Avra Valley area, and that whole system has really put us in a position of having, I won't say a plentiful supply of water, but a plentiful supply of water in the sense that we have stored it underground. And if you look at the contours within the city of Tucson and particularly this entire valley, you can see that the water table is actually rising because we're pumping so much of that water back in. And that's really the goal. And I think that's, to the credit to councils of decades past, they really had set that stage. And I think that our current councils fall in that same suit.
All right. We began our conversation with you, Mike Ortega, talking about revenue, and I kind of want to bookend our discussion. How has downtown's development, which has been really pretty darn spectacular, helped at improving our revenue picture? And I also wanted, if you can just touch briefly on how annexation is really the future for making the city sustainable.
Sure, Bill.
Two-part question. Then.
Sure, I got it. I think the downtown, we'll call it the development downtown, has really and truly been spectacular. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. I think the streetcar had a lot to do with that. I think the investment along the streetcar, the partnerships that we've developed with Rio Nuevo, with the university, there's a variety of opportunities there. But I will tell you that we're seeing a lot of interest, we'll say, outside of downtown, moving along the corridors, North First, going up Grant and Broadway, et cetera, where folks are saying, hey, this is there's some good opportunity, some good commerce opportunity. So what I've suggested to the council is, these conversations are long-term. So there's the short-term sales tax, obviously, when there's a retail establishment. But then there's the long-term. As people invest in Tucson and bring employment here, those people buy homes, they spend money, et cetera, et cetera. And so the long-term is very bright with the Raytheon expansion, with Caterpillar, with Hexagon Mining. I might give you the list, right? To answer the second part of your mm-hmm. question, there's an opportunity through annexation to bring more state shared revenue here. And because of the way the formulas work, the state shared revenue is a function of population. And so although the state population may change and go upward, if ours doesn't keep pace, and certainly we could even do more by bringing more people into the city, we can bring those dollars into the region. And so that's a proponent or an opportunity for us as a region. I know the council has been very interested in that conversation. We're pursuing it. I know we just had our largest annexation, I believe, ever over at Swan and Valencia. It didn't get a lot of press, but, I mean, that was a big deal.
I did not know about
that. Yeah, it was Swan and Valencia, and we're really glad to have those
people. Is it a mixed-use area of homes
I believe most
businesses?
Of it's residential. Okay. Most of it's residential, but it does set the stage for annexing other areas.
And if people want to join in, you have to have a majority.
You do. It's 50% plus one, both of the popular vote or the people that live out there, as well as 50% plus one of the assessed valuation. So there's two thresholds there that we work with folks that are interested in annexation.
Dylan, do you have anything more to add? Because I actually do.
Go ahead. Jump on it.
Okay. The one thing I was wondering about, and we are, I know, over time, but it's my program.
It's your show. Okay. You do what you want, right?
We didn't talk about golf courses. And I'm just wondering, is that a piece of Proposition 407?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. It is a piece. There is a small amount of money for Randolph, specifically identified as Randolph Irrigation. Mm-hmm. And so the conversation there is that the irrigation lines at the Randolph courses are archaic. They're really old. And so we have some money put in the bond to redo all that irrigation, or at least most of it, which will help, again, on water costs and all the other things that go along with that. So there is an opportunity to do something pretty positive there at that facility.
And maybe the next time we can go into the whole future of golf in the community. And here's a good one, Dylan. Metro government. Boy, that could take up a whole half hour, couldn't it?
I don't think you can squeeze that into a half hour. That's definitely an overtime discussion
that
there.
That is really an overtime discussion. It's kind of one of those, what if the Tucson area had a metro government?
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Mike. Some other time.
Yeah, I look forward to
Mike Ortega, always a pleasure. And Dylan Smith, don't go anywhere, Dylan. We've got our roundtable coming up. Joe Ferguson is waiting in the wings. We'll be right back. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Neighborhood stalwarts. Virginia and Frank Buttley are overjoyed when Tanya and Pablo Del Valle move into the fixer-upper next door. But opposing views about culture, politics, and landscaping push these well-meaning couples into a border battle. Don't miss Native Gardens, a laugh-out-loud, big-hearted comedy with a lot of sharp little teeth. September 8th through the 29th at the Temple of Music and Art. Tickets available at arizonatheater.org.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the roundtable portion of our hour on Friday. We begin with a Friday Focus interview. Today it was Mike Ortega, Tucson City Manager. Then we chat with a couple of news types here in the community, and one of those news types is Joe Ferguson. Joe writes primarily about politics for the Arizona Daily Star. However, he's very capable, sure could write about just about anything, but right now it's politics. Joe, how are you, my friend?
I'm well. 50 days until an election, guys. Bearing down the hatches.
When do they drop the early votes?
You got about 20 days.
Oh, 20 days.
Yeah, they go out, a month beforehand?
Correct.
A month minus a day, I think. So October 10th?
I think it's the 9th on my calendar.
The 9th is the last day to register.
And whatever, right before then, we're going to kind of redo, and you two will be with me in studio with FN Rodriguez, which is good. Because there's a lot to talk about. Yeah, and you will be here.
All right.
And
it hath been decreed.
There you go. Because the primary was spectacularly successful in terms of a lot of people turning out.
Well, yes and no.
It was record turnout.
Record turnout, but still most people can't be bothered, which
that's
is embarrassing. And
so
folks, if you're not registered to vote, please go get registered to vote. You've got like 3 weeks left to do it. Go sign up. If you are registered to vote, cast your ballot. Have your say. Thank you. My little infomercial
and
there.
Joe,
I can't beat that, guys.
No, how do you beat it? Let's kind of veer away from politics. I guess everything is political, including Too Simple, which is coming to town. I'm sure there are political implications of that. It's a Chinese company, right, that's working.
They've been here for a while. They've been here for about a year or so.
And kudos to you. You kind of developed some inside info when you kind of broke, I think, the original story, two for Too Simple.
It's a Chinese firm that basically is developing systems to run driverless semi-trucks to streamline deliveries between cities. Mm-hmm. And they've been here for about a year. They started in China, and they've got offices in Beijing and San Diego, and they're doing a lot of the actual hands-on engineering and testing here in Tucson, and they're expanding. They, over the past, really almost year, built out a pretty impressive facility on the southeast side, 50,000 square foot. They basically took a shell of a warehouse and turned it into a plant where they can work on all this stuff, and a big area to drive the trucks around. They've been actually undertaking some commercial contracts and using these things here in Arizona as a, you know, sort of small-scale test. But they plan on expanding from the 100 people they have here to about 500 employees, they say, over the next several years. So, you know, this is in one sense, not just a big deal economically for Tucson to have some decent-paying engineering jobs coming here, but it's a burgeoning tech sector that is, you know, getting itself established here. We see in Southern Pinal County, there are some auto tech manufacturers that are moving in there. It's something that might be poised to take off in Arizona in a much bigger way than we've could have thought about a few years ago.
And I know some people are very skeptical of this. However, we interviewed here on the show a U of A professor who really specializes in this area, and he says that the driverless truck, like Too Simple is doing, is kind of the vanguard of what that the trucking will come first on our interstate highways, and you'll see more of the driverless cars, the vehicle, driverless vehicles. But some people are skeptical, saying, oh, you know, there's going to be an accident. And in fact,
we've seen, you know, around the country several accidents. There was the, you know, very unfortunate crash that in which one woman was killed up in the Phoenix area. Mm-hmm. Was that earlier this year, I think?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And, you know, we've seen that around the country. It's certainly not the most refined, perfect technology yet. Of course, having folks like me drive around town is not exactly the most refined technology either. So, you know, it has its ups and downs. We're seeing sort of a lot of maneuvering with lobbyists who make a lot of money as far as regulations go, and there's a bill working its way through Congress basically barring states from setting stricter limits than the feds are, mm-hmm. which might set an even playing field, but also really takes away the ability of the states to control who's driving on their streets, if anybody's driving it at all.
I'd be very careful with those people who say, oh, it'll never happen. They were probably the same people that 110 years ago or something were saying, oh, that drive, the horseless carriage. Hey, I still make buggy whips, and we've got a future here. There's no problem with buggy whips. I've got a new load coming up, and thousands sitting in the warehouse, right? All right, let's bring
new
our
old
friend,
stock.
Let's bring Joe Ferguson into the conversation, because Joe really doesn't have much to say, I don't think, about
my colleague
vehicles.
Dave covered the story. It's an interesting story, and mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see if there'll be a day where I'll be able to drive from here to Vegas while taking a little break from the wheel, but I don't have a lot of, you know.
Well, now you're getting into that whole I-11 thing, too, so.
Well, let's talk
That's
about
a different can of worms.
Joe, let's talk about your story today in the Arizona Daily Star. John McCain's family upset about the late senator being featured in an attack ad. What's this all about?
Well, they grabbed some campaign video from when McCain was being challenged by Kirkpatrick 2 years ago. They've put it back on the air. It's been recut to show that McCain doesn't approve of Kirkpatrick and has been critical of her. But it's borrowing from a man who's just been lost. And so the McCain family has strenuously objected to it, saying it's, you know, a terrible and unfortunate use of the video. And that was 3 days ago. The ad's still running. So it's been, you know, condemned by the Kirkpatrick campaign, while Leo Marquez Peterson hasn't really weighed in on whether the ad should stay up or should come down.
And this is the National Republican Party basically running this.
It's an IE, but yeah, it's one of the arms of the National Republican Party.
So Leo Marquez Peterson does not have direct responsibility for the ad.
She has no control.
No control. However, what if she were to say, I find this deplorable, would that matter?
I think it would have some aspect of it if she condemned the ad, but she so far has not chosen to do that. So far, she says she has the utmost respect for Senator McCain, and then...
And went to his funeral, I believe. She was at the funeral. Dylan, this whole thing about attack ads, and of course, I don't watch much TV, and I don't think you watch a lot of it either.
I'm trying to avoid it.
But anyway, who are these ads appealing to? Joe, can you kind of articulate that for us?
Well, it's not TV no more. I mean, you're going to run into watching a movie someday, and there will be a 30-second ad for some candidate. They have sponged every type of media channel you can possibly imagine.
It's on the
imagine.
Internet, yeah. Facebook, so, right?
YouTube, so, yeah. Twitter.
Social media.
Right. Yeah. So I think, you know, that it's a trying to push for the low-end information voter, trying to find those who really don't have a lot of opinion about it, and they're trying to fire them up on one way or the other to get them involved in this particular race and in other races.
A lot of these negative ads are really designed to suppress the vote. They're supposed to make you disgusted with the entire situation.
Throw a shoe at
and
the
not
screen.
Go to the polls.
Yeah.
If you think that you would, you know, if be not doing well if everyone showed up, you're going to run a whole lot of negative ads to try and make it so that only your really hardcore base voters show up and hope that other people do not. You want to try and turn them off. Mm. And it's a really unfortunate way to campaign, I think. I mean, it's certainly fair to point out your differences with another candidate, even where you think they might be completely and utterly wrong about things.
Right.
But to just, you know, try and make it so that people don't want to participate at all because they hate the entire prospect of voting is despicable.
You're going to be with Kate Kensky, the Dr. Kensky, the communications guru over at the U of A, who knows so much about these areas. Mm-hmm. You're going to be actually on a panel tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning at the main library downtown. I think the doors open at 9:30. We'll start discussing things around 10 a.m. And there'll be four of us. I can't remember all of us who were talking off the top of my head.
Okay.
But we're going to discuss how to be a better informed voter these days with all of the, you know, I really don't like the term, but, you know, fake news mm-hmm. floating around and misinformation. And I mean, where should you go to get good info? How should you parse through what is, complete partisan blather and what's actual facts? And how should you better decide? And how to share that yourself? How to take part in a legitimate, rational, grounded conversation about issues?
So perhaps you can ask Dr. Kensky whether or not she thinks attack ads work, and then yeah. I'd like to ask her personally. Maybe we'll try to get her on the Friday before the election. That would be a good session here.
There you go.
Here on the show. Joe, the polling, and I've only got a few seconds. I just saw another poll. Fox, I think, showed McSally lose down a little bit, but those polls have gone
all in the margin
there's
of
three
error.
Or four. They're all yeah. within the margin of error, three it's or
a,
4 points.
Yeah, just very
tight. It's a very tight race. Okay, Joe, do you any piece you want to tell us about coming up on the weekend, or you don't want to reveal it yet, or what?
Got more interesting Interstate 10 news for Monday's paper.
Oh, okay. We'll look for that. Joe Ferguson, Dylan, thank you as usual at TucsonSentinel.com. We'll continue to follow your work online. Thank you so much. Take our break right here. Matt Russell, Weekend Watch, coming up next.
Hey, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. It's that time. U of A tailgating. I mean, this place is sizzling. I gotta have one of those burgers and one of those dogs and, hey, aren't you?
Hey, it's Mark Irvin hanging out here with my pal Ollie Farhang.
Woo! Who's under this Arizona Party Rental tent? Ryan.
Ryan Jeffries. And no steak for you.
Oh, yeah, splattered mustard all over your back. Wait a minute. You are?
Ryan Hansen.
Hey, you can join the party, too. Arizona Party Rental, your celebration destination. Online at arizonapartyrental.net.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for six new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust. and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. All right, that music means the weekend is here. Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. SouthwestNewMexico.org. That's the starting place for a great weekend. 3 hours drive east of Tucson. So many recreation opportunities, like hiking in the greened up Gila National Forest after the summer rains, or how about a little trip up to the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Lots to do. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the great starting point. And here he is, Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist, and of course, Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist. And he is a dedicated foodie who loves a couple of the first food groups that we'll be talking about in our first Weekend Watch item.
That's right, Bill.
I know you love bacon. I know you love a couple of brews. So there you go. You got two out of three.
Yeah, well, my fellow fans of pork fat, craft beer, and blues music have reason to rejoice tomorrow afternoon at the annual Bacon, Blues, and Brews event at Brother John's on Stone Avenue. Brought to you by the Tucson Originals. It starts at 3 o'clock, and more than 10 local restaurants are going to be engaging in an all-out bacon battle to see which creative pork belly dish represents bacon's true beauty. And there are absolutely no limits to their imagination. You can taste all the entries and vote for your favorite while enjoying some local beers and live music, all for only $25. Bring out the bacon tomorrow at 3 o'clock at Brother John's.
Over at the BJ, Brother John's. All right, speaking of beer, we got more.
Yeah, if you'd rather wait until sundown to get your food and beer game going, you might want to check out the annual Born and Brewed Beer Battle at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at Hotel Congress. Virtually every local brewer is going to be there pouring samples of their finest suds, which you can enjoy alongside German sausages and barbecue sliders, German potato salad, live music. Now, this is a competition as well, Bill, so prepare your palate for the significant votes that you'll be casting at the end of the night, and I'll be taking the stage to personally announce the winners. These $35 tickets are going fast, and you can get them now at hotelcongress.com.
All right, you sure get around from a lot of these foodie events. We sure appreciate it. I love a good farmer's market, Matt.
'Tis the season for these wonderful farmers markets across town, and local farmers have been working hard growing these fiery chilies to help satisfy our cravings for their seasonal specialties. This weekend, you can taste and smell and savor the region's best chilies at the Heirloom Farmers Market 17th Annual Chili Festival. The markets are going to be overflowing with locally grown chili varieties, freshly roasted green chilies, arrays of fresh and chili-infused specialties from other market vendors. It's tomorrow morning at the Oro Valley and Rincon Valley Farmers Markets, and Sunday morning at the Rialto Park Farmers Market. I like them hot, Bill, and the heat will certainly get turned up this weekend.
You'll be breathing fire, my friend. In the Inside Tucson Business Food and Beverage column this week...
Yes, there is a special Polish sausage made at a downtown restaurant, Bill, and the recipe came from the chef's great-great-great-grandmother. That's three greats. If you want to know what tradition tastes like, you can check out my column in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Have a terrific weekend. Thanks.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. A big thank you to all of our friends here at KVOI, including my friend on the other side of the glass, Ray Allen. Ray, with me usually Monday through Thursday, and today doing a little extra duty on Friday. Ray, of course, our outstanding operations manager here at KVOI as well. The whole team here that I'm fortunate enough to work with, people like production manager and funny man, we always had that, Jerry Cross, Alicia Elsaranda, the front office staff, of course, the Mr. and Mrs. Martin, and all of our friends here at KVOI. On behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. I hope you have a great weekend.